is NFL Nuts Sunday with Ryan Hannibal, the ultimate
football podcast.
Let's get started with NFL
Nuts
Sunday. Now here's Ryan Hannibal.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Andy, welcome back for your second WAI podcast. How's it going?
What is it called again?
The Not Sunday podcast for now.
For now, anyway. Going terrible. I hate traffic, but...
I know. Let's hear it.
I don't want to go all Alex Reamer on you, but it's ridiculous out there. Rain, I know. There's a little bit of rain. So put your windshield wipers on and keep driving.
How long did it take you?
2.5 hours.
Woof. Woof.
Yes. Woof indeed. But enough about that. Let's talk Patriots.
Yes, enough.
No one wants to hear me bitch about traffic, so let's talk Patriots.
I do, but we'll save that for later.
Okay.
Minicamp over with, OTAs, Bill Belichick canceled them. They went paintballing yesterday.
Nice. Hopefully they all wore the proper eye gear.
Looks like Ted Karras is part of the winning team, James White.
Sweet feet.
Yes. What are your takeaways from watching 3 days of minicamp last week with Tom Brady being present? I thought that was that sort of changed the intensity level, better play.
Yeah, there's no question when you have the Hall of Fame franchise quarterback actually there to put things in motion for what is essentially a passing camp, as they used to term them, that it's better. It's better for your team. And I think I don't think it's a coincidence that 2 years in a row, Brady skips OTAs, comes to minicamp, and then Bill, after minicamp, cancels the following two OTAs the following week, because you're taking a step back. It's two steps forward, one step back if Brady leaves and everything goes back to Hoyer. And we certainly saw that when Brady wasn't throwing, it didn't look all that good.
Correct.
And whether that was Etling, Stidham, or Hoyer, there's a lot to be lost when they are running the show, and I think that is not a coincidence. On the flip side of the ball, I would say your best player on defense is who?
Stephon Gilmore.
And Stephon Gilmore very much looked like the best player on defense, building upon a Pro Bowl season. He looks ready to go, and we talked about it in the first podcast I did with you. I think the strength of the defense goes back to front, and in that order, from secondary to linebackers to defensive line. And I think that's secondary. Even without Patrick Chung out there, I thought it was interesting. If you want to, you know, get into the minutia a little bit, this is a football podcast, so why not? Obi Mellon Fanwu, or however the hell you say it. Obi.
Close enough. Getting
reps next to Devin McCourty. And I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's a legitimate plan or one of those sort of last ditch, let's see if this guy really is part of the situation. Because as we get into this, you know, we're going to be posting a roster projection on the website today.
Yep.
And I think the safety position is interesting because it's three locks and then not much else. Whether it's Obi or Ebner or those guys, they're unknowns defensively. They haven't really done much. Obi got a few snaps last year.
Ebner wasn't even present last week.
Ebner wasn't even taking part. And I think he's in trouble, personally, in terms of roster spot when you balance out role and money.
I sort of agree with you there.
I think he's toast.
I think with you brought in Terrence Brooks, it seems like that's sort of like a Nate Ebner, basically exactly what he does.
Yep.
So that was bad news for him. And then I think the money makes sense, too.
The only way he sticks is if he's on a list, I think. I don't think he makes the team coming out of camp.
You
brought back Brandon Bolden. Sure, but that's why he gets paid the big bucks. It's not easy. That's why he always laments, oh, it's the toughest day of the year. These guys lay it out for you. That's all great, but it is a business. And if you're making 53-man business decisions, I'm not sure Ebner's part of it anymore. In fact, I'm pretty sure he's not.
All right, we'll save those for a little bit later on. But another thing last week, I guess, the thing that stood out a little bit to me on the offensive side of the ball was Isaiah Wynn was out there, but not really taking part, which left Joe Tooney as the left tackle and then sort of a mishmash at left guard with Brian Schwanke and Ted Karras.
Yep.
What's your read on the left side of the line?
I am more worried about guard than I am tackle. I think they can find a way, and people may not know or may forget that Joe Tooney was an all-ACC left tackle in his final season at NC State, where he played everywhere except center in the course of his career there. So I think he looks the part. I'm not saying he'd be great. I'm not saying it's going to be the Nate Solder or even Trent Brown perfect fit.
So are you worried about Isaiah Wynn starting week one? I know it's June. But
I've sort of I'm now of the mind that he's not going to.
Okay.
I think that's why they signed Jared Valdir.
But he makes the roster.
Oh, he's who?
Isaiah Wynn. He starts the year on the roster, not PUP or anything.
I think you hope that he starts the year. You know, talking about Achilles injuries with what happened to Durant last night. I mean, they're still one of the handful of real major injuries. They're, to me, they're not as cut and dry as ACLs have become. ACLs, I feel like, have really become, they know how to fix it, they know how to rehab it, they know a general time frame. I think Achilles are still a little more, there's a little more variable in there. And beyond the Achilles, he has to prove he can play.
Yep.
At 6'2", with all the questions coming out about short arms and is he a tackle, is he a guard? Now, if he's healthy, I feel better because I think he plays one of those two spots at a starting level.
Okay.
And I don't know if Ted Karras is an NFL starter. I don't know if Brian Schwenke's an NFL starter. I don't know if they have a true NFL starter to go to that guard spot. So right now, to me, they have four guys for five spots, and then it's up to Win et al. To kind of make the rest fall into place. And I think around here, we all fall victim to Scar will fix it. It'll be fine. Scar's out there. They'll figure it out. But you have a 42-year-old quarterback or soon-to-be 42-year-old quarterback, and you've swapped out left tackles now 2 years in a row. It went really, really well last year when you moved a right tackle trade addition to left tackle. Boom, he made himself $60 million.
He had a little bit on the line, and if he had played well, he sort of knew it was coming.
Well, Joe Tooney's got plenty on the line. He's going to be a free agent. You know, I joked with him that putting left tackle reps on tape could really be beneficial to him. Now, the flip side is if it goes poorly, there's going to be a lot of blame placed in his area because it won't be on Scar, because everybody will say, oh, you know, Scar's done it before with everybody. This is just a guy who can't do it, whatever. You know, Isaiah Wynn, I think there's pressure. And we know all the questions about tight end and wide receiver. If you add offensive line to those questions, now you're really talking about how good is the offense going to be? Are they going to be able to score their usual 30 points and be a high-scoring unit? Receiver not as good, tight end not as good. Now suddenly offensive line, Brady's under pressure. Do you have to turn to the running game more often and say, okay, we can't pass protect, we got to be a power running team, which we saw slivers of last year, and certainly they ran the ball in the postseason, but another guy not out there to start the mini camp action was Sony Michel. And everybody took the positive being Damian Harris looked good. Well, he looked as good as you can look in shorts and t-shirts.
Everybody looked good.
Let's see what happens when you actually, you know, put pads on and have to hit the hole and get hit. So no Sony Michel. Everything has question marks right now to me offensively except Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady looked really good.
Of course. He looked,
right.
He looked much better than Brian Hoyer.
Well, it's
and
not
those
of course.
Guys,
some people think there's a cliff coming.
No, I mean,
some people think podcasts should be named after cliffs.
Yes. Speaking of offense, wide receivers, what stood out to you there? We saw, I guess, particularly N'Keal Harry. We saw Brady working a lot with them sort of off to the side during special teams work. Troy Brown was working with them one-on-one. Even Josh McDaniels would stop at some points and talk to him. What was your read on Harry? Because he was sort of the star of the first OTA, but that was just because he caught a lot of passes. What did you think last week?
I thought there was more bad than good.
Agreed.
If I had to term it, if I had to do, you know, a 60-40 split or something, I'd say 60 bad, 40 good.
Yep.
I think his hands are questionable. Too many balls bounced off his hands. Now, whether that is mental, because he's thinking, doesn't know where he's supposed to be, isn't where he's supposed to be, slants were behind him, deflecting all of that stuff. Okay, that could be true, and maybe once his head catches up with everything, the hands will be fine, because he is supposed to be Mr. Contested Ball Strong Hands. But I was concerned about his hands. Certainly the route running is a question mark. You know, he was getting fine-tuning from Deion Branch, Josh McDaniels, all of them. I wrote about it, and I thought it was really interesting. One drill where he was just running outs and little short cuts against Josh McDaniels, you know, sort of giving him a look corner, and there was a throw where he had to lunge way to the sideline on an out. Josh McDaniels talked to him, then kind of gestured to Brady like, that's out of reach, that's too far, and Brady turned and threw his hands up. And that's what you're going through there. This isn't just, you know, he has to fit in. He needs to fit in quickly to be part of the offense, because it's Edelman and then him. Like, theoretically, he's a lock to make the roster because he's a first-round pick.
Right.
So as a lock to make the roster, theoretically, he's next in line to have a big role in the offense. Right now, it's a major work in progress. And, you know, Brady talked about it in, what was that, 13, the Tompkins-Dobson year.
Yep.
That he couldn't treat it the same. He had to have maybe a little bit longer leash, be a little bit more accepting of mistakes and problems. He's going to have to do the same thing again, certainly with Harry and with others.
He sort of alluded to it, too, though, when he's talked after Thursday.
It's unfair.
It's unfair that, you know, these rookies come in with such high expectations. And to me, that was sort of saying, let's pump the brakes here with N'Keal Harry.
All right, well then, Tom, don't throw your hands up when Josh tells you don't throw it so wide.
it goes both ways for sure.
Yeah, so it's on him to get him acclimated, but then it's on Harry to, A, know what he's doing, catch the ball when he's supposed to. There were a lot of times where his college tape of not a lot of separation was shown on the field. And that's one area where I do think it's relatively competitive, relatively replicates actual game, is the corners are covering the receivers.
Right.
It's very similar because you're not allowed to touch anybody really in NFL rules anyway. So the lack of separation there, we'll see. But it's a definite work in progress with Harry, and he has a long way to go.
Some other veterans, Dontrell Inman, Maurice Harris. I guess
Mo Harris, I liked him.
You can lump Braxton Berrios in there. I liked Maurice Harris. I think he did probably the most for himself last week, connecting with Brady, with all that other guys in that same mix.
Yeah, those three guys I would definitely rank: Harris, Berrios, Inman. Inman was like non-existent for the bulk of it.
I don't think he caught a pass, single pass in 11 on 11.
I don't think he did, and I don't. He's an NFL receiver. I mean, he's experienced. Productive. That sort of surprised me because I, coming in, would have put him projected as the top of that three-man group.
Yes.
Whereas now I think he has the furthest to go. And I think Harris looked really good, strong hands, contested catches, caught pretty much everything thrown his way. And as we talk about this process, that's how you build that relationship with Brady, that trust that you need to build sort of quickly. And if you remember, there was a very positive vibe when he signed about production, Football focus crap based on all that crap that I don't really care about, but he looks good catching the ball, and that's a good first step. And then Berrios, I thought, was good, not great. Had a couple big plays, big catches, had that long ball down the sideline in one of the practices that he then got up and spiked after the diving catch, which I still wonder how his the way
reputation?
He carries himself, no, the way he actually, beyond his reputation, the way he carries himself, I would like to know what Bill and the coaches really think about that.
Well, to me, I think it's an indication where he caught a touchdown pass probably five plays later and just handed the ball off to the coaches.
Correct. And I wonder if something was said, but he clearly has whatever you want to call swagger or, you know, little man syndrome or a Napoleon complex, whatever it is. He's got a chip on his shoulder. But he also has an opportunity to make this football team, I think.
Defense, I know it's sort of hard to grade defense during this because there's no real contact.
87. There was a solid B-plus for the defense during the whole camp.
All right, sure.
I thought they were ahead of the offense.
Why did they get an 87? I agree.
I thought the coverage was good.
Yep.
I thought the linebackers looked athletic.
Which is something we haven't seen.
They got their hands on balls. Now, some of them were Stidham passes, and so take it for what it is.
I thought he went 5 for 8 passing.
Oh, I'm sure he did. You just ask everybody who keeps those stupid stats. But I thought he looked the defense, like Jamie Collins had an interception. There was a deflected pass interception for the linebackers. So Hightower, I think, got his hand on a ball. So they were active in the passing lanes. And again, that's what this is. It's a passing camp.
Right.
So forget the run plays and big holes and all that. I thought they looked good. And I'm intrigued by that group. We saw Mayo calling the defensive plays.
Yes.
We saw Jawan Bentley calling those into the huddle, you know, with Jamie Collins sort of helping out. But I think when you have Bentley, Hightower, Collins, and Van Noy, that's four pretty
solid players,
good athletic, some versatility, rotation. You know, I've always talked about it. I think the Patriots' defense over the years, especially at linebacker, has been at its best when it's had extra bodies, rotational guys.
Guys that can play certain roles.
Right. And back in the day, it was, 3-4 outside linebacker. There were three guys for the two spots. So there was always somebody in and out, matchups, health, staying fresh. Same thing on the inside. Three guys for two spots. And if they have that again, I think it will take a little bit of pressure off of all of them. They'll all have to do less and be more suited to their roles. So I think that's a sneaky good group, the linebackers, especially if Hightower is healthy, because I thought he managed himself through the regular season last year a little bit.
You brought it up just there. We disagreed a little bit on the last podcast about the coaching staff. Any takeaways from the coaches?
I'm right again.
Why?
Because I think Jerod Mayo took a first step toward calling defensive plays. Now, I'm not saying he's definitely going to be the play caller,
right?
Because I think it makes perfectly obvious, simple sense that the linebacker's coach would have the script in front of him and actually call the plays into a linebacker.
Right.
But I also think there's a good chance. He was very active and engaged. And I think there is a good chance that what I've been saying all along is that he's going to be the defensive coordinator. He's going to be the defensive play caller. He essentially did it for years in those meetings, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, when you're part of that process. And it's not going to change much for him. The rest of the coaching staff, we'll see. You know, I think it's easy to say, oh, it's spring camp, it's scripted, we all know what we're doing. What happens when it hits the fan in week four and the secondary's getting their ass kicked and the secondary's not getting any help from the pass rush and stuff's flying around? Oh, and maybe Bill's paying a little more attention to something else. And he's, I think there's a lot to be worked out there on the defensive side of the ball that you're not going to see in a simple OTA setting or minicamp setting.
I wrote about it Tuesday on the website. Nick Cassero up for the Texans job. They want to talk to him again. I think you can't, you know, you obviously don't want to lose him any year, but I think this year, maybe bigger than any other year, you can't lose him just because of the fact that Bill has so many more responsibilities. Like, he's going to be more involved, active on the defense because they don't have a defensive coordinator.
Yep.
He's probably going to have to do more, you know, just special teams, wide receiver, that stuff. He's probably going to have his hand more and they're seeing what's going on. So if you lost Nick, Bill's sort of in charge, having more of a role in the defense, still being the head coach. Then he's handling all the personnel moves. I think that's just way too much on a guy that's 67-year-old's plate.
Ah, he looks young. Good
looks
bounce
great.
In his step out there, I thought.
But I don't know. How do you feel? Do you think they could afford to lose Nick Cassero?
Yeah, I think they can afford to lose anybody not named Belichick and Brady. But it wouldn't be ideal. I mean, we've
especially
joked about
at this
it.
Point.
Your wide receivers coach from the past could be helping out the wide receivers. He throws. Bill has just been over the top how there's nobody like Nick Cassero
right.
in the National Football League. Absolutely. It would be a huge loss on a lot of levels. He is Josh McDaniel's go-to guy in the box on game day. I mean, there's so many layers to what
he's
he does.
He's on the field during practice week.
No question.
Game week, sorry.
There is no question that it would be a massive loss. But would it be derailing? And the other thing you're not going to know is which part of it would be derailing. If Nick leaves and then they go out and go 8-8, they might have been going to go 8-8 with Nick.
Right.
With all the turnover on the roster, Gronk is gone, lack of receivers, offensive line, and then all the turnovers on the defensive coaching staff, you don't know which of the straws is the one that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah.
I think it would be a big, big loss that you would feel year-round. Because he's not
right.
just a GM that you feel in free agency and the draft.
Right.
He's a year-round contributor to this football team. I will not gloss over that. But if he were to go, guys will step up. Monty Austin Ford will step up. Brian Smith will step up. Ziegler will step up.
But
the guys
we know,
they have.
They probably can't do what Cassero does.
Well, they can't throw
now.
Like him. We're pretty
no
sure about that. He's got a pretty good arm. So when they
perfect
go and work out quarterbacks or receivers and different things, it's going to be different. But that's what you find out over the years. Like Matt Patricia, you know, he steps up in the promotional process, right, and becomes a head coach in his own right. Brian Flores steps up. He goes from scouting to coaching. That's what they do in New England, and that was where we sort of argued, is do you have faith in that or do you not?
Right.
You know, if you promote DeMarcus Covington to linebackers coach, you feel good that this is what we do around here, this is what Bill does, and more often than not, it works. Now, I brought up the counterpoint, it doesn't always work.
Right.
The same thing would hold true in the front office and the, you know, the decision-making process there, but there is zero question you can't replace Nick Cassero in the versatility, what he brings to your football team on a year-round basis. It's just not possible. He's a very unique guy. That said, I don't think he would take it personally.
That's what I was just going to follow. What's your gut say?
My
there?
Gut tells me he stays. I think he's very happy in the role.
I sort of agree with you. I think he doesn't mind sort of not having that GM title.
Oh, I don't think he minds at all. I think he's very, very well compensated financially.
Right.
Ever since the Miami
they
thing when he went, he's taken care of. I also think he'd be concerned that he'd get somewhere and, you know, walk out to practice to start throwing and people be like, no,
like
you
Bill
don't
Bryan's
do that
like,
here.
What are you doing?
Or
go,
the owner,
go
Bob McNair, or somebody says, no, we're not doing that here or something. Like, I think he very much likes everything he's allowed to do, the leeway, the respect he's
unique.
Given. Right. And I don't know, you know, his wife comes from the Patriots organization. They're sort of entrenched here. His buddy Josh is here.
Well, he has his buddy Bill and Jack Easterby.
But his buddy Josh goes back a lot further than his buddy Bill and Jack Easterby.
Correct.
Those are much longer relationships that those guys have, dating all the way back to college, receiver, quarterback, that whole thing.
There's more guys. Dave Ziegler has been around.
Right.
Goes back there.
So I just don't see him doing it. Now, maybe he'll surprise me, and maybe this is the time he wants to go out and branch out on his own. I also don't know if that's the right situation.
I was just thinking that, too. The guy, Brian Gain, was fired after 1 year.
Right.
And O'Brien hand-picked him.
Right. And Billy O'Brien, he's your buddy. That's right. He's also a very volatile guy. I think he's shown that over his coaching career. So I don't know if that would be the ideal perfect situation to jump from what looks like the perfect situation for Nick Cassero.
Jack Easterby, like his. So, do we think he had a role in the decision making with the Patriots?
No, I do not. I never bought that. I will never buy that. He apparently has ascended very quickly to a right hand man role for Billy O'Brien and a voice who
strange.
It's very strange, and I don't know. You know, that was, I believe, Ben Volen who reported
right after he left
that Easterby had a say in like personnel decisions. Yeah. I don't buy it. I don't believe that to be true. And
until
somebody specifically tells me that, I will not buy it. Now, will he have a role in what's going on in Houston? Certainly sounds like it. And I don't know enough about that organization and those people down there. The people I trust, the people that are reporting out of there, that may be true. That's really interesting. And he's an interesting guy on a lot of levels. But if he's making Houston pretty quickly.
What's your let's get into
what
your
are you doing over there?
Your roster for
a little behind the scenes. Why are you touching keyboards and stuff while we're talking here?
I'm making sure it recorded.
I'm not saying this again if it didn't.
It's recorded.
Angry Andy just got out of a lot of traffic. He's not saying this again.
We're good. Sneak peek of your roster projection. You can read it on the website, but I guess my sneak peek, you did not have Jonathan Jones on your roster.
Nope.
Why?
I think he is going to be the odd man out in the back end. The wild card there, to me it comes down to Duke Dawson and Jonathan Jones. Never before has a second round pick been let go in year two.
You also had Keon Cross.
Hasn't happened. Did I have him on or off?
Off.
Okay, yeah, off.
So you have Keon Cross and off.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Jones off in favor of Duke Dawson.
Duke Dawson, I actually thought he looked decent in OTAs, the little bits I watched of him. And because I came in, I had no opinion of him. I thought he was just there last summer. And then missed the whole year, came back, and couldn't find his way into the rotation when he came back from IR. But I do think the fact that they brought him back from IR says something about what they think of him, how they feel about him. And again, he's a second-round pick. They're not going to cut him. They've never done that before.
That would be a huge ego thing for Bill.
He could go on IR and then cut him next summer. And then it's
so it doesn't look as bad.
Different, like you go down the... what's his name? The guy who couldn't catch punts.
Cyrus Jones
route. See, you're getting better already. You're filling in the names. Well done, Ryan.
That was an easy one.
It was an easy one. I should have known that. Traffic anger has clouded my mind. But beyond that, I think you have, obviously, Gilmore, a lock. Jason McCourty, a lock. J.C. Jackson, a lock.
Yep.
And Jawan Williams is a lock.
Has to be. Second round pick.
Unless he gets hurt.
Yeah.
That's the thing with these early projections, is you just don't know the injuries. Or quote-unquote injuries that could come up. But I think Jonathan Jones, not a guaranteed tender as a restricted free agent, wouldn't surprise me if he was a trade. One of those, getting later in training camp and we swap something for something.
A cornerback.
You trade him for maybe a receiver.
There's definitely extra guys at that position you can play with.
Conditional pick maybe you get for him, depending on whether he makes a team, whether he stays and plays, all of that. It's a competitive position, and it wouldn't stun me if Jonathan Jones is on the roster.
Right.
Because I think they like him. I think they think he's pretty good.
Right.
Now, his money is starting to maybe outgrow his role, and he doesn't have the benefit of being a second-round pick, which Duke Dawson and Jawan Williams both have that attached to them. And I also think those two, in theory, are a nice combo as matchups. You know, Duke Dawson has a more traditional slot corner, and then you have Jawan Williams as a matchup, big guy, physical, press, line of scrimmage guy that you can pick your spots with those two guys and back up a lot of different roles. But that's an interesting position. We'll see.
What was your hardest position to fill out?
Quite frankly, none of them. They were actually pretty damn easy because some of them are just unknowns.
True.
And I kind of went with the knowns at the offensive line spot rather than unknowns that I'm not really comfortable
with.
Very
early projection.
Cedric Lang or some guy could suddenly be a tackle on this roster. I don't know anything about him. I've never seen him put pads on.
Big guy.
Right. He looks the part. If looks matter, if looking the part matters, then he's got a chance. But so I kind of went with the known commodities. I mean, it's a good sign for a guy. I thought Ted Karras this year could be in a fight for a roster spot.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's a good sign that he's taking reps with that first group in mini camp action. I think that's a good first sign for him moving forward. And his versatility and their trust and everything, obviously, that helps. A couple other guys, you know, Christian Sam is a guy that wouldn't stun me if he made the team. I don't have him on the roster right now because of that position. I would say Alandon Roberts wouldn't stun me if he was a surprise cut. As a guy who's played a lot for them, started a lot. But if they're healthy at linebacker, they're deeper now at linebacker. And he could be a guy that's an odd man out. The wide receiver position at the bottom of it, who knows? If you tell me that Harris is out and Inman is in,
that position could be decided like August 30th.
I don't believe that position will be decided in August. That's one of my little theories.
Things from last year,
I think you could have a couple weeks of rotation and guys coming in, and you know, at final cuts, they cut down to 50 and then sign this guy from there, that pick this guy up off waivers, and a week later, that guy stinks too, so we're cutting him, bring somebody else in. I think that could certainly be a possibility there. Defensive line, I think, is an interesting position when you get to the back end of it, because Derek Rivers, I know I made my bold prediction
six to eight. I'm just going
Let's not just go high side there for my benefit, please. 6 to 8. Well, it wouldn't stun me if he's just cut either as a third-round pick who's done nothing, couldn't really find a spot for himself even rotationally last year, and they've added at that position with a guy like Chase Winovich.
To me, I could see them going low on the defensive line / defensive end, but high at linebacker because you're so versatile at that position.
Sure.
And you have more of it.
Sure. You can pop Dante Hightower on the end of the line, use him as you needed.
Van Noy as well.
Van Noy. Yeah. And Winovich is a quasi end linebacker type. Even Simon. I mean, they have a bunch of those guys. The way those play out, another area that is probably interesting. I only kept two tight ends.
That was my next one.
I don't think they're very good, so I keep a bunch of crap.
But they have technically three because Ben Watson is on.
We'll be there in 4 weeks.
Right.
And I would have him
but
on
he's
the
not
week
actually
five roster,
on that roster.
But he doesn't cost a roster spot early, and that's one of the – they're not that good. And if I need blockers, well, I got Cole Crosston or whoever, Ted Karras, some extra tackle. James Devlin can line up out there as a wing if you need him to fill
James
that
Devlin
role.
James Devlin can do everything in your mind.
Well, he is a Pro Bowl fullback, and I believe Bill Belichick said something about wanting to have a team full of James Devlins, and you do very well. Might not score a lot of points, but you do very well.
You'd be tough.
Tight end, he's not just going to keep bodies, so I went with Lacoste, who I thought looked pretty good in minicamp.
He did solid. He did a good job.
I thought he caught the ball well. I thought his hands looked good. I thought he was relatively athletic, adjusting to balls in the air. And Ryan Izzo, just because
he's been around and can block.
He's the best of the rest, I guess. And now, I know some people hold out hope or think maybe Austin Seferian Jenkins could be re-signed.
No.
I am not of that belief.
Neither am I.
But if that comes back, maybe he has a chance. I don't think so.
Do you
I
see them going out and adding a tight end between now and training?
Well, it won't be Kyle Rudolph, I can tell you that much, after his new supposed 4-year, $36 million extension, in which he now says he's basically a Minnesota guy for life and whatever he said in his stupid Facebook post or tweet.
Tweet.
I think they're still – I'm keeping two tight ends. I think they would like to have three tight ends. Heck, the second tight end I kept, Izzo, not that good.
Right.
No idea. So do I think, yes, Jonathan Jones for a tight end trade or claim a tight end at cuts? Sure. I think there's a very good possibility. Wide receiver, offensive line, tight end, I would say are the three positions that could change in August or early September as they see who's available or, you know, one of those, well, we get an extra this, you get an extra that trade right before cuts kind of deal. Trash for treasure, who knows?
I got a little bit on the quarterbacks. Danny Etling didn't really make that big jump that I had hoped he would have made.
I've never understood the blind. You know, they say have like GMs and scouts have blind spots.
Yeah.
Your blind spot for Danny Etling, the guy wasn't good from day one. He stinks.
Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't good at day one.
He was way better than him. This was a blind spot. Just fall on the sword, say you screwed up, and move on.
He's a nice kid. He works
hard. Now being nice matters? Because there's a lot of nice guys. If nice mattered, then Ted Karras is a starting NFL offensive lineman 16 games a year.
I just looked at him, the way that he works, the way that he progressed. I saw he
works hard.
He improved from day one last year to the end of the summer, correct?
Well, he couldn't have gotten worse.
But he improved. And my thing was that we did not see him from the end of training camp through the Super Bowl.
Right, and he didn't improve in that.
But I didn't know that.
Right.
I was giving him the
I don't know why you decided to fight on that mountain or whatever they call it. You died on that hill.
I made a bet with someone in the back room of Gillette Stadium last year that Danny Etling will start one NFL game.
A regular season game?
One.
You lost. What do you have to pay?
I think it's a lunch.
You owe somebody a lunch then. He'll never start an NFL game.
No chance?
Never.
You don't think he gets picked up by another team and becomes a backup and gets started?
He'll get another shot.
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, by the way, we should clarify. He's still on the roster in New England as of right now. We're being a little bit premature, but I think the general consensus is he may not make it to camp, that they won't
have four
arms.
I don't think it makes sense to because...
Well, if Nick takes the job in Houston, you might need that extra arm, right?
I guess.
Because Danny Etling in chunks of minicamp was a glorified ball boy. He got sent off to throw when a ball boy probably could have done the same role.
Yes. Because he's taking away time from Jarrett Stidham, who needs the development.
Correct. I'm sorry, but you blew it.
I blew it? I didn't do anything.
You blew it.
All right.
You thought Etling was good. You thought he was going to start in the NFL.
He still can't.
Because, quote, he's a nice guy.
He works hard.
Oh, great.
I saw him get better.
You work hard. Are you going to play in the NFL? No.
I saw him get better. I just gave him the benefit of the doubt.
I think you saw things that no one else saw.
He had that 60-70-yard touchdown run against the Giants.
Great. You know what that's called?
Nice things to say.
Fool's gold.
Because
when a quarterback tucks and runs in the preseason, it's actually a bad thing.
It was a great bootleg.
Bad thing.
All right. I guess this might be.
It's because he can't go through reads, can't make throws. Now, you're going to have the same issue with Stidham this summer. Mark it down. Stidham will have some long runs.
I
mean in general. Because he's already looking like the guy who having trouble go through his reads.
Yes.
So what am I going to do? I have some athleticism. I'm fast. Tuck it and run. I'm not standing here and taking a hit. I'm not throwing a pick.
Right.
So you're going to see that with Stidham, too. But the question there is, and I referenced this in the roster projection on our website, is do they keep three?
They have to.
Well, they don't have to. There's no rule. I mean, you could argue.
So you're saying that Stidham makes a team over Hoyer?
Stidham's on the team.
Right, because a team would claim Stidham, no question.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question is, do you have to keep Hoyer? On two levels. A, do you need him? Because he didn't look great.
He's never looked great.
And B, would he just, you know, live in Foxborough and if you need him, call him? Or would there be a chance you'd lose him in some way? I doubt it. I can't see him being too popular. He's been around a long time.
He would also have the choice, too. So he could say, I don't like where
it wouldn't
I'm
surprise
at.
Me if he's one of those guys that they cut, and then when we're in there the Monday after cuts, there it still says Hoyer on top of a locker, so he could return at any moment.
Right.
Although it's digital now, so maybe they'll delete those.
It's easier.
They won't leave the actual sign up. But that would be the only question. If I had to say right now, they need to keep three.
I
kept three. I think they need to keep three. I would not feel good turning it over to Stidham. But as I said, maybe you just call Hoyer down the street and said, Brian, Brady tweaked something. Although Brady never tweaked something. So what do you even need two backups for? Keep none.
None.
If Brady goes down, you lose anyway.
Bring back Etling.
No. That's a guaranteed way to lose.
Probably is. What are you looking for, I guess, in this next, you know, so basically the Patriots are off till training camp.
Correct.
Do they?
Bill will be in Nantucket. Tom will be in Costa Rica.
Brookline, California,
wherever
Montana.
Wherever he goes. Yeah, he really does have a pretty good
nice life.
Well, nice lifestyle there.
Do you see them making any moves between now and then, and if so, at what positions?
No, I don't see any moves between now and then.
No?
Maybe a minor move where they cut.
You don't see there's not that many big names out there, but maybe a decent wide receiver, a decent tight end?
No. I guess I won't eliminate that. Tackle, wide receiver, tight end. I guess there's a few names, but why now? Like, what's changed? Or is it just
they're available
on the other end?
You know, you need.
No, but nothing's changed. They've been available. You've had the need. So nothing's changed there.
Well,
now, maybe you get the veteran who says, okay, now I
want
to have a job once July 29th comes around. Okay, I'll take that minimum offer with no signing bonus and no security while I was hoping for more. Is there a chance of that? Maybe. There's also always the chance that Gunner or one of those types is gone and
some new guy
swap it out for another Bemidji State guy, but no, I don't think there'll be major changes or even changes maybe at all between now and when they open camp. Then when you start camp, maybe you have a little bit after that. This feels like there's two moves a week in camp, something like that, two or three ins and outs
more.
A week.
Yeah,
as guys get nicked and you need an extra body at this position or whatever happens.
There'll be joint practices. I think we didn't see those last year. Do you like those?
Love joint practices.
Yep.
Now, it's going to be interesting because you have 2 weeks of away road joint practices that really sort of alter the feel of training camp for fans at Gillette coming down there, that experience.
Yeah.
I know there's been some rumbles of adding extra practices on the back end so that there's a little more time for home fans to
open to the public.
To get in and actually
Bill can
see.
Bill can be okay with that?
If he has a boss, too, just like the rest of us. So if his boss says he's okay with it, he's okay with it. If he's not, then he can leave, too, like we all can. But I think I like the joint practices. It always certainly helps Bill. How often have we seen guys come in that he saw in joint practices with other teams and seem to like scouting report?
The fifth wide receiver on this team could be with the Houston.
Could be a Lion
be
or
the
a Titan.
Titans right
no
now.
Question. Now it's the flip side has worked too. He's lost players that he wanted to keep because of joint practices. Grugier Hill, the Pro Bowl special teamer and then now starting linebacker, was certainly one of those guys. But I don't think they'll happen again because I think Mike Vrabel and Matt Patricia will adhere to the unwritten rules that I think Bill likes to put forth for these joint practices about not poaching each other's players. But no, I think it's huge. I think it's so much beneficial to both teams, and I think for our purposes, it's just so much better to write about and take notes on.
And you know that these will be better run than, say, the ones they had with the Bears a couple years ago where there was a fist fight after every play.
Yeah, like, I don't think
Vrabel
that'll be an
issue. Vrabel and Patricia are, you know...
I mean, I don't eliminate it.
No, but...
I mean...
But it's not... I mean...
Mike Vrabel did say after throwing back to his quarter, we just wanted to show we could show him how it was run or whatever he said. So, there, I mean, there's still an edge there, and I don't put it past him.
But it's
Patricia
like,
will do nothing. Patricia will do whatever Bill tells him to do.
But it's not like the Bears, you remember, there was literally a fight after every single play, and they got nothing done.
Correct. Yeah, these will be productive for the most part, and I think they will be run on a good workmanlike manner, and certainly Detroit.
Are you of the mind, too, where these take away from the preseason games, whereas there's maybe not as much intrigue in the games because most of the work's done beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that.
Right.
Where guys don't even play.
Yeah.
You know, the classic example was Washington a couple of years ago in Richmond, where they had that hellacious, like, three-hour practice where guys were, I mean, Edelman and guys were basically passing out on the field. They were working so much, and then nobody played.
Right.
But take away, quote-unquote, from preseason games, and so you didn't get two series of nothing, you didn't get six play, whatever. It's not a huge deal, and I think the benefit to the team, and even the benefit to the fans, I think it's kind of cool to watch those joint practices.
Agreed.
Outweighs any loss of a series or two in a preseason game.
Right.
And then I think that benefits you on the back end. Find out earlier if Stidham can get out there under the bright lights earlier in a preseason game.
Agreed.
And see what happens. Does he crap himself or does he step up and look better?
So we're right now beginning mid-June. We don't know when we'll really be podcasting. Maybe we'll do one, you know, in the
When will we do it? What will it be called?
True, a little bit up in the air.
Where will we tape it?
Yes.
What will the traffic be like for me trying to get there? Didn't I hear the opportunity to do these remotely?
Yes.
Okay, I like that. Like Rodney Harrison and his co-hosts. They're not in the opposite cities.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you at some point between now and training camp.
I'm like Bill and Tom. I'll be on the beach if you need me.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Andy. We'll see you.